Welcome to Packet Pushers, the greatest ever data networking podcast, published several times per month because too much networking would never be enough. Today, we are located once again in our sumptuous virtual office suite with an endless supply of coffee and virtual donuts to keep you energized during even more discussion around software-defined networking. The networking industry has moved through the early phase of SDN, and most of you know that SDN is going to be the long-term future of our industry. The denial phase is pretty well over, and we are well into the acceptance and research phase, especially by the early adopters. Now, I know because you've been writing in and telling me and Ethan that you are struggling to cope with what you have today and the pain of your current technology, right? And it's pretty difficult to imagine that you've got to go out and start this whole thing all over again when you've probably just mastered the technology that we've got. But as the story goes, when you're fighting a battle with swords and armor, maybe talking to the salesman about pistols and muskets is a damn good idea. So today we are sponsored by VMware NSX, and we're going to be talking about their network virtualization and where we are now. Now, we've talked about SDN plenty in the last 4 years, especially NSX in show 161 when the product launched back in September 2013. But today we wanted to sort of get an update 2 years on where are we with NSX. And this particular show, we're going to focus less on the magic, the technology magic, and a little bit more on the business and human aspects of the NSX, like where are we now? Why are customers using it? What are the myths? What are the realities? Where are the pain points? What is it that's stopping you from getting going, and what does it add? NSX has been doing that for quite some time, and let's talk about where we are. So joining us on the call today is Milind Desai. Milind, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Milind Desai. I'm responsible for product management for NSX. I have been with this product since its inception, and I'm excited to be here today.
Thanks very much, Milind. And also with us today is Bruce Davey. Bruce Davey, tell people a little about yourself.
Hi, this is Bruce Davey. I'm the CTO for networking at VMware. I've been in the networking industry for about 25 plus years. I guess I think of myself as an old networking guy at this point, but I am now retooling myself as a modern network virtualization guy. I joined Nicira back in 2012, and then came in through the Nicira acquisition to VMware, where I'm now associated with the networking and security business unit.
Perfect. So, there's an interesting point right there for me is that NSX isn't just a networking product. You're actually saying networking and security. Is that a key point?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we'll talk maybe later a bit more about the use cases, but a pretty substantial chunk of NSX adoption has been driven by security use cases.
All right, so it's been 2 years since, NSX arrived, was debuted at VMworld in 2013. We had show 161 where you talked about it just a few weeks after the launch. Tell me a little bit about where you are now with the market. Talk about, adoption, customers, how many people are using it, production, things like that.
So it's been 2 years, as you mentioned, and we are now into two releases post our initial release. So the 6.2 release just went out at VMworld. In terms of where we are today, we are extremely pleased in terms of the revenue goals that we've met with NSX, in terms of the number of customers, but more importantly, the value that our customers are seeing by putting NSX in production. So in terms of raw numbers, we have over 700 customers who have purchased NSX. 65 or more have purchased over $1 million of NSX. So they're actually investing substantial amount of, revenue into this product. And over 100 customers are now in production using NSX for a variety of projects.
Effectively, what you're saying there, and there's a little bit of, marketing babble going on, no disrespect intended, but what you're saying is it's not just a handful of customers here. You've got 700 overall, and there's big money involved to date in the 2 years that we've been doing this.
Absolutely. And a number of them are in production, running them for a variety of projects, bringing value to them.
So, and you're making a distinction between who's bought it and who's actually got it in production.
Yes. So this is a very important thing to understand is we are in a early phase of a market. And so we are not just interested in having customers procure the product. We actually want them to install and leverage the product in their environment, bring the benefit out so that we can actually see the transformation occur and see the movement towards network virtualization and security virtualization accelerate. So we are working with our customers to take them to production.
What is it that are driving people to this initial adoption phase? So, a lot of people are saying to me, I've just got so much pain around my existing networking architecture and NSX is for VMware. I kind of don't know where it is. What is it that use cases that people are focusing on? What is it that's making them hot to trot, if you like?
There are three major areas where we are seeing traction. And I'll start off with security. One of the big value props of NSX is what we call micro-segmentation, the ability to, you know, protect east-west traffic, the ability to provide a security policy that's associated and applied closest to the workload and that can move with the workload in a very simple manner. And so customers are really, you know, liking that use case. As an example of micro-segmentation, most recently, Microsoft announced the end of life of Windows 2003. So one of our customers reached out to us and said, how do I isolate this workload in without NSX? And so how would you do it without NSX? You would create a separate VLAN, re-IP the machines, go through all the challenges of understanding the communication patterns. And this takes time, effort, downtime, and a lot of planning. With NSX, as the workload set as is, we would apply the NSX security policy, isolating all the conversations associated with Windows 2003 without any network change, without any redesign, and in the matter of minutes.
Let me just drill into that for a second. What you're saying is you can basically say, I know something about the 2003 servers. You're just saying, I know all the IP addresses of them, and I can micro-segment that way, or...
So actually, from within the hypervisor, we can check to see what OS is running in any VM. So you can actually specify a policy that says, if the OS equals this, then the policy is that. And so so even if you haven't even created the VM yet, you can still create that policy. And then when somebody spins up a VM and the OS is Windows 2003, then it automatically gets that policy. So it's quite a lot more automated and high level.
Because the hypervisor actually knows, can see the operating system because you're the CPU, effectively, in the hypervisor layer. Server names, same thing. I could actually just create a policy saying server names. All these server names belong.
Yeah, you can be pretty flexible with that. So you can say things like, you know, if the server name contains web, then it gets the web policy. And you can also just associate sort of metadata tags with any arbitrary group of VMs and say, if the metadata tag equals foo, then the policy is the following.
I think another big selling point of that, this micro-segmentation solution, is that NSX is a distributed firewall. So you're billing policy once and then able to push it throughout the NSX, what would you call it, a domain? But basically a bunch of hosts are going to get this same policy without having to do individual configuration.
Right. I mean, there's really kind of, I think, two main points there, right? That because the policy is implemented in a distributed way, it's extremely scalable, right? So it sort of goes, it scales horizontally as you add more compute capacity, you get automatically get more firewalling capacity. So that's kind of one thing about being distributed. The other thing is the policy is applied right next to the VM. So the packet, before it even leaves the physical server, is going to hit the firewall sitting inside the hypervisor. So you can apply policies at this sort of very fine-grained level, at the VNIC level, without having to go and sort of trombone the traffic or hairpin, whichever term you prefer. You don't have to sort of, you know, take the traffic all the way across the data center to some policy enforcement point. You get to enforce it right there at the VNIC.
And that's why we have stateful firewalls too, right? The point, that reason that we often use stateful firewalls is because we don't trust the source or the destination to be what they say. So we need to use stateful firewalling to make sure that the source and the destination are the only two talking. But if you're firewalling right at the host, you need less stateful firewalling to meet your security obligations.
Yeah, I mean, I think you still want stateful firewalling, and we do have that inside NSX, but could be making a fair point that the demand for like really deep inspection of the data is lower because you know so much about the source already. Yeah. So for example, maybe you don't need to go and do deep packet inspection to figure out what's going on because you're sitting right next to the host and you can figure it out more easily.
Well, if you've just specified the name of the host and you know that that name is associated with this application, you don't have to start doing firewalls on SQL rules or doing deep inspection on the SQL to make sure, because you've already isolated it down a bit tighter.
Exactly.
So does segmentation feeds into the argument or the need for tenancy too?
Right. So, I mean, I think, you know, we kind of got a little distracted from answering your question about what all the use cases were.
All right, sure.
But so I'm going to answer your most recent question and your earlier question in one go.
Okay.
So the idea of sort of multi-tenancy was actually kind of one of the very first things that we were working on. You know, when I joined Nicira in 2012, I'd say that was the main thing that we were trying to build into the product, was sort of automated support for multi-tenant networks. So, you know, if we sort of look at the historic use cases for network virtualization, the early adopters of NSX were actually trying to build either public or private clouds. And the main thing they needed was the ability to build isolated networks for each tenant of those clouds. You know, so whether it was a public cloud provider, you know, who would be massively multi-tenant, or maybe just a private cloud where you wanted to provide isolation between the virtual networks of different departments or different developers, this idea that you should be able to create completely isolated networks for every tenant was kind of fundamental to what we were doing from day one. And I think not so much focusing on the security perspective initially, but more on the fact that you needed to be able to build these networks in a way that was highly automated and, you know, could be done without having to go and involve the IT department every time a developer, say, needed a new virtual network. So we typically refer to that today as the sort of the automation use case. And just to complete the thought, you know, Milan mentioned that there's sort of three broad classes of use case. So there's automation, micro-segmentation or security, and application continuity is the third use case or category of use cases. And, you know, within those, there's lots of kind of subcategories. But that's the kind of the broad landscape of use cases that we see today.
Yeah, so you're saying, you know, when you were in Nicira, I sort of saw you as a public cloud. You were sort of more targeting the public cloud providers than you were the enterprise. But when you moved to VMware, it became clear that the enterprise market had a much greater need for this with micro-segmentation. And you know, a lot of people in their data centers today just have two or three zones in them, one's production and one's non-production, or production and maybe non-prod or pre-prod and then dev. And that's all they get because they have to have these fixed static firewalls. And having this micro-segmentation allows you to have 20, 50, 60 segments inside of your data center. That is like a multi-tenancy model or a segmentation model for a public cloud provider, just adapted to what the enterprise needs. I guess I want to focus on this application continuity point that you raised. Bruce, what do you mean by that? I don't think I understand that well.
Application continuity, it's generally sort of what does it take to keep an application running all the time, independent of anything going wrong in your physical infrastructure? At a high level, what network virtualization does is it separates the provision of network services from the underlying infrastructure. It's an abstraction layer. And so basically what we're able to do now is to say you have a primary data center and a backup data center. They can now be treated as just pools of capacity on which you run applications. And because you've now abstracted routing, addressing, firewalling, all the network services are abstracted away from the underlying infrastructure, it's much easier to start treating the backup data center as just another pool of capacity. So if you have an outage affecting your primary data center, you can very quickly spin up the VMs that you needed to run the application. That's been, you know, a capability we've had for a long time. But now you can also spin up the network that application needs. And so that sort of idea of like making it possible for applications to run all the time in any location is what we mean by application continuity.
The way to think about it from kind of project standpoint, what our customers are telling us is they break it down into disaster recovery, where they're talking about full failover across data centers at a distance. They talk about metro pooling, where adjacent data centers are made to look like one, and they can move applications across these data centers seamlessly, in some cases live. Now an emerging conversation is around the hybrid cloud networking, where they can burst to a cloud provider. And what are the connectivity models that are associated with that? So those are the projects that our customers are telling us when they talk about application continuity as a category. And with the 6.2 release, we have started to address some of these key projects in a much more elegant way.
You mentioned spinning up into another data center and sometimes even being able to do that live. And that implies, again, you've got the networking piece of that stitch up, which is kind of an interesting point to raise here. NSX has an underlying network infrastructure that it rides on top of. There's got to be something there already. You don't buy NSX and replace what your networking is. You're actually leveraging the network you have and adding additional functionality to it, as I understand it.
That is correct. You have a underlying physical infrastructure that is providing a connectivity model. And on top of that, you have the abstraction layer of NSX that provides that indirection for the workload. So in the scenario where you're talking about two adjacent data centers, they could be completely two separate physical networks connected over a layer 3 domain. And then the NSX abstraction layer makes it appear as if it's one layer 2 domain in software, and not only just layer 2 connectivity, we're talking about layer 3 east-west routing between workloads, as well as the security aspects that we talked about, and in addition to that, providing local egress optimization as part of the solution set if the customer desires to go in that direction.
And again, this all goes back to the root value proposition of this kind of networking is there's an overlay that allows you to do things that being constrained by the physical network doesn't let you do.
It's always good to sort of think of the sort of analogy between network virtualization and server virtualization. People didn't stop buying servers when VMware introduced server virtualization. They just put an abstraction layer on top of their servers, and then they install their operating systems, their applications on top of that software layer. And now they've decoupled things from the underlying infrastructure. And so things like live migration become possible. Similarly, people aren't going to stop buying switches and routers because of network virtualization. They just start to treat the switching and routing infrastructure as a resource that provides capacity. And you now start to map your workloads onto that capacity in a very flexible way because you've decoupled the networking services like firewalling, routing from the underlying infrastructure. And so, you know, to get back to sort of the application continuity example, you know, this now means your backup data center and your primary data center, instead of looking like two completely different networks, they just look like two pools of networking capacity. And I can take a running workload from one data center, move it to another, and keep all of its routing, addressing, firewalling all identical because the software that provides that can remap the abstraction as you move workloads.
The underlying network doesn't have to change to support that. All of that is contained within the overlay, and it is a function of that. Well, what to most network engineers they think of as a tunnel that is, again, abstracted a layer above, so you can move it wherever you need.
Right. Yeah. And the tunneling is just like, it's, you know, it's one of the sort of low level pieces of mechanism that lets you, you know, abstract away the physical infrastructure from what's going on in virtual space.
Now, you guys had just started talking about the version 6.2 release. I'm not sure just how recently you announced that, but that's a pretty recent announcement. Can we talk through the highlights of that?
Absolutely. So 6.2 is a continuation of the set of innovations we bring on top of NSX. There are a large number of functionality that is part of that release. The key areas of focus, I would say, are in three areas. We talk about expanding NSX control, and let me go into a little bit more detail about that. So with vSphere 6.0, there was a major add-on feature called Cross vCenter vMotion. The ability to take a workload live from one vCenter domain to another, and thereby which taking a compute and storage policy across those domains. And this is a big deal for our customers who have multiple vCenters in the same data center. So with NSX 6.2, now you can essentially scale out your vSphere deployments with not only compute, storage, but network and security policy that is consistent across multiple vCenters. So that's one big attribute that is coming together with 6.2 and vSphere 6.0. Another big point of control within the data center is we are extending the control of NSX to bare metal workloads using the Open vSwitch database protocol that we are working with the industry on. So with NSX now, you can program physical top-of-rack switches to participate in logical domains managed and controlled by NSX. That's one aspect of within the data center, and then expanding control between data centers for disaster recovery. We talked about this earlier. Copy-paste your configuration and failover workloads in metro scenarios and then in the hybrid cloud scenario. 6.2 brings enhancements for these use cases and thereby expanding the control point of NSX in the data center. So that's one attribute that 6.2 brings.
So let's talk a little bit about the metro and the hybrid things there, because you caught my attention there. And most people have an obligation today to have a VM running in data center A, and then they want it to run in data center B. When you talk about metro, are you saying some sort of high-speed link between data centers, say, you know, the 75-kilometer rule or 500-millisecond rule, where the data centers can be a certain distance apart and you can actually start to treat them like just one facility, or is it something different?
Absolutely. That is the right characterization of what metro means in our definition.
So is there any optimization functionality in there? Like, are you doing things to enhance the universality of that, like make the networking work in optimal in one of two data centers, or, you know, any of the other sorts of things that you want with metro capabilities?
So the way we think about it is we take the two you know, what I call as two data centers, make them feel like one, and then the communication of the workloads for between the tiers, let's say web and app, is all east-west. It's communicating over the overlay and optimized for security and network reasons. And then as a design, you can choose to send all the traffic out through data center one, or if you want to optimize it further, you can choose to send, as the workload moves from data center one to data center two, locally through data center two. So we do offer local egress optimization as part of the Metro solution.
And what about integration with storage? So one of the bugbears that I've had in the past is, you know, with a vCenter orchestration is I might have a server on the left-hand side and then suddenly somebody swings it over to the right, but the storage is still back on the left-hand side. Is there synchronization going on there yet?
Yes. So we work with our storage vendors on this front. We have a capability in vSphere called Storage vMotion, whereby which in scenarios where you need to move not just the compute state, but even the storage state, you can do these two in conjunction and handle the scenario that you talked about specifically in that regard. And in that scenario, you could actually have two different direct attached storage systems, and that's where Storage vMotion would take place. Or it could be a synchronous solution from your partner of choice or your storage partner of choice, EMC, NetApp, or others.
You need to have, so the NSX needs to have hooks to comprehend where the storage is, because you know you don't want to be fiber channeling across the metro to reach the storage. You want the storage to be in the same data center as you.
Right.
And you want your networking to be smart like that as well. Like we've had the storage vMotion and the compute link together, so they move in lockstep. The thing I wanted to know is, you know, does NSX do that too? And you're saying, yes, it does now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way to think of it is that you have to think about all your resources when you start hooking metro data centers together. And so it just kind of doesn't make a lot of sense to say, I'm going to start vMotioning things between metros and leave the storage behind. So you know, we don't take care of the storage, but there are other parts of the product family that take care of storage. Essentially, what you can think of now is that every resource that a virtual machine needs can move with it when it moves across between these data centers. So you can move its storage across using technologies that are outside of NSX, but you can also move all the networking with it so that you know the routing is optimal. You know, you don't hairpin back and forth across between the two data centers. And as Milan said, you can also get optimized local egress so that you don't have to hop across to the other data center to get out to the internet, say.
And I think it's a good thing just to mention some of the fundamentals here is when you do that, you're not extending a layer 2 VLAN from site to site to achieve this.
No, that's right.
In the physical underlay, there's a great deal of risk associated. Normally what you would do today is extend a VLAN from data center A to data center B, and you'd have these spanning tree domains that span both data centers. And if you stain the risk, if the spanning tree melts down, the blast radius is both data centers. You lose everything. If you're using NSX, you're not necessarily got a layer 2 underlay there. You'll have a layer 3 if you've designed it right and been lucky enough to do so. And the layer 2 is actually happening in the NSX overlay. So spanning tree loops are not a risk anymore.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. So I think the first time I started hearing about data center virtualization was probably like maybe around 2004 when I was still working for an unnamed traditional networking company. And it was actually really depressing to me that people started sort of assuming that the right way to deal with the sort of newfound mobility of workloads was that you should start stringing L2 everywhere. And like I was kind of pounding my pounding my head into the table thinking, look, I've been doing networking for 20 years. How can it possibly be the case that we're now going back to saying L2 has to go everywhere? Didn't we learn that like in the 90s, if not the 80s? And so like I'm actually super excited that, you know, that sort of tendency to say, oh, L2 is going to be the answer to all our VM mobility problems has kind of been pounded into submission now by the evolution of network virtualization.
It's still a source of great misery to me that, you know, people still don't grok the concept of blast radius. It's so easy to forget that, you know, spanning tree might only melt down once a year, but the point is that when it does, it takes down everything.
Yeah.
And the risk, and it can just be a faulty NIC. I've seen it, you know, entire data centers go down because there's one faulty NIC somewhere that caused a problem. So that is a real, you know, takes away that risk, and you should be able to sleep better on a weekend if you care.
My attitude is friends don't let friends run L2 between data centers.
Well, yeah, there's one thing. Now, the second part of that question is we talked about Metro, so that's kind of like the two data centers, which is a hybrid cloud of its own in my mind. But you mentioned hybrid cloud and saying NSX has got some features for hybrid cloud. Now, of course, we talked about vCloud Air or whatever it's called this year, and or other people's hybrid clouds. You know, maybe you want to burst out to Amazon or the Google. How does NSX add value around the hybrid cloud? Because I know a lot of people are big on this.
I'm here to confirm it is still called vCloud Air, and that's the good news. The way to think about it is we offer capabilities whereby which a service provider customers can essentially deploy a remote gateway. Think of it as a headless device that they can deploy on a customer premise, whereby which they can then provide either layer 2 connectivity if it is needed in software, or a layer 3 connectivity back into their data center. So whether it's vCloud Air or a vCloud Air network partner or a service provider just using VMware assets, we do provide these capabilities whereby which we call it remote onboarding. Using this gateway, this remote gateway, you can connect on-prem networks to the service provider network in that regard. And so that's something that we are starting to see some interest and demand for based on our service provider community.
And I think that's important because a lot of people are starting to think about using third-party premises and, or not just colo, but third-party clouds, just put some stuff in. And you know how these things, you put something in as a Band-Aid and all of a sudden it's permanent. And having the features to support that, or knowing that there's some elasticity in the features, is actually, I get asked that quite a bit, basically, and I think that's key to highlight that particular point.
Another question I could use some clarification on. You mentioned with NSX 6.2, better integration with physical infrastructure, top of rack switches, and so on. So let's get specific about that. What sort of operations are we talking about, and what sort of switches can I do those operations with?
Yeah, so we've been working on this for quite a while. And what we've done is we've worked with our partners in the industry, most of the switching vendors, and we've developed a sort of open standard around the Open vSwitch Database Protocol, OVSDB, and we've specified a schema that enables us to communicate information about logical networking state between the NSX controller and these top-of-rack switches. So the sort of thing that you can do is you can go into NSX and say, I'd like to create a logical switch that is connected to a certain set of VMs and that also connects to a certain set of physical ports on various top-of-rack switches that are registered with NSX. And then NSX kind of calculates the logical state and it pushes information out into the database that's running on the top of rack switches. And ultimately what you can do is you can say something like create a logical switch that has some physical ports connected to it, connecting up some bare metal workloads, and also has some virtual ports connecting to virtual machines. So essentially what it does is it gives us kind of a unified operating model where whether you've got physical machines, non-virtualized workloads, or virtual machines, you can connect them up to a single logical switch and just get consistent operations across both physical and virtual.
I'm hearing that I can map into specific physical ports on these switches, which means I don't have to be quite so careful about how I do my plumbing to hosts to get redundancy out of it, or I can isolate workloads to specific physical links. What are the biggest use cases that we have here?
Yeah, so you can think of this as like all the use cases we talked about earlier can now be extended to include bare metal workloads. So, for example, you want to have a multi-tenant network where some physical device gets connected to some set of virtual resources, but it doesn't have access to all the virtual resources, or you want to sort of isolate one virtual network that has a mixture of virtual and physical resources from some other virtual network. So effectively doing a lot of the same things that we do in virtual space, but just being able to do that for physical workloads as well.
Right. Okay. And this goes back to one of the early criticisms, I would say, of NSX, where, they're not so good at dealing with those bare metal workloads. You got to have a gateway and it's kind of ugly and, so if you're a mixed physical and virtual environment, maybe your life isn't so good. But now you're dealing with that.
Yeah. And I think the concerns have been overstated from the beginning. It's like, VMware, the hypervisor company, what do they know about bare metal? But it's like, we've always had the ability to connect bare metal workloads through our edge gateway. And, I think it's if you're a traditional networking person, you expect to connect things through switches. We still use the switches. It's just that, we need some device to get the traffic in and out of the virtual space. And we actually have a lot of customers in production using, an x86-based edge as well. So to some extent, what we're doing with these hardware partnerships is we're, first of all, getting over some objections that maybe exist in theory but aren't that important in practice. But also, we're providing like a high throughput, high port density solution. So if you have a data center with a lot of racks of bare metal workloads, it's definitely going to be nice to have the ability to use the top of rack switches to connect those into NSX managed virtual networks. If you have a data center that's like 90% virtualized, the solutions that we've been shipping for a couple of years actually, you know, meet a lot of people's needs too.
Now, the key here is OVSDB, it sounds like. So my switch needs to support OVSDB to be able to take advantage of this. And would we say any OVSDB-capable switch can be managed by NSX in this way, or is it, you know, a tighter restriction than that?
Yes. So, I mean, essentially, you know, most of the industry seems to be going down this path of supporting OVSDB, and, you know, you have to support the protocol, and then you have to have a database in the appropriate schema. And, you know, we publish the schema as part of Open vSwitch, so it's readily available for anybody who wants to get it. And also, there's an open source implementation of the database itself that's also published as part of OVS. So, most of our partners have actually just picked up the open source code, ported it onto their platforms, and, you know, become compatible with NSX very quickly. So yeah, you can't just go and buy a random switch from any vendor and expect it to work unless it has both the protocol and the schema. But, you know, as I say, the ecosystem that's providing that support is getting pretty big at this point.
And it's not something you as an end user can deal with. It is your vendor, your switch vendor, that will need to do that. You add that schema.
Yeah, that's right. Because, you know, even though, you know, I guess theoretically on a white box type of switch, you might be able to install OVSDB yourself. You still need the software that connects the physical drivers for, you know, mapping a port into a logical switch and that kind of thing.
What about operationally? So part of what I would like to ask in the next section is to talk about how NSX is changing life operationally. So if I've got OVSDB in the physical switch and I've got a certified, you know, a device which is NSX ready, if you like, and it's been blessed as, you know, integrating with NSX, what does it do for me operationally? If I'm inside the NSX tool, do I start to see the physical network underneath? Do I start to configure physical ports? How does it work?
We want to sort of distinguish between management of access ports to the overlay and then management of the underlay. So with an NSX-capable top-of-rack switch, you can certainly see the physical ports as resources that you can manage within NSX. So you can go into the NSX manager and you can map physical ports or port VLAN pairs into logical networking space. So you start to see that capability once you have an NSX-capable switch. The management of the underlay is a separate issue. And, you know, independent of whether you have NSX-capable top of racks, you're going to want to manage your underlay. And so generally speaking, what we do is we rely on tools that are outside of NSX to manage the underlay. Some of those are VMware tools. Some of them are third-party tools. And so there's quite a lot of tools out there now that are quite capable of managing both underlay and overlay through a single pane of glass. And we actually showed a demo of this at VMworld with our own vRealize operations tool, which is now developing the ability to manage or to sort of provide operational insight into what's going on with your underlay. And of course, for quite a while now, it's had the ability to also show you what's going on in the NSX managed overlay. So you're starting to see sort of a unified pane of glass view of both the overlay and the underlay.
You know, if I'm operating a network, when I'm using NSX, you know, it's all just VMware. And then I've kind of got to jump out of that metaphor, that UI, UX metaphor out of NSX into a completely different one, whether it's Arista or Cumulus or Brocade or Dell or, you know, your partnerships, you know, with the hardware vendors is quite extensive. You can pretty much pick whatever your favorite flavor is. But you've got to get into their metaphors for configuring stuff. And sometimes I find that experience jarring as I shift, and mentally we're asking the network people to map, you know, one, have a mental model of how NSX is working, and then have a completely different mental model of how the physical network is working, and that mapping those two together I think is going to be a key point. Is that fair?
That's a very fair point. And actually with 6.2 as a whole, operational excellence is the second theme of how we have thought about the release. And so I'll dive into the tools aspect a little bit, and then we'll talk about the other aspects around operational excellence, people and process. So when you the thing that you mentioned, which is how do I think about end-to-end visibility from, say, VM1, what is the packet flow from the VM through the NSX modules, through the physical NIC, going through a top of rack, through the network core, back to another VM, maybe sitting on a different rack. And so we worked to built-in tooling that provides a logical trace flow in NSX itself. And then in conjunction with our partners who are building plugins into tools like vRealize Operations, you can get a unified view of what you're exactly saying across virtual and physical. There are other companies that are doing this, like NetFlow Logic, which takes flow data from the virtual assets of NSX and from the physical system, and provides this visibility across virtual and physical in Splunk. There are startups like Arkin who are showing this as a common entity, again, across virtual and physical in their dashboards. EMC Smarts is doing this. Gigabon allows you to capture packets across virtual and physical through the same console now, NSX as well as physical, and then send it to maybe a security device for deeper inspection. So we are starting to pull together our own tooling, making it better and more robust and new features and functions. But in conjunction with the ecosystem and the tools that our customers already use, we are starting to provide end-to-end visibility as it relates to packets in terms of just how are packets flowing, as well as troubleshooting if you're looking at things like packet captures and other elements.
And that's really interesting to highlight that, because if I think about a normal physical network, we've got this open, well-established sort of standards, loosely, if you want to call them that. But, you know, Gigamon's got their network tap technology so they can get in and gather the data and send it off for the monitoring or the visibility piece. We've got spam ports. Everybody knows how to read SNMP to get data out of it. So you've got, you know, all the companies who've got the SNMP monitoring platforms. But what you're highlighting here, I think, and something I hadn't quite realized as much as I thought, is that you're partnering with a whole bunch of companies to build management or operational ecosystems around NSX to provide insight into what it's doing and how it's configured, but not just as NSX alone, but as part of the overall ecosystem. You're, in a sense, acknowledging that there's more to life than just NSX and vSphere.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. That, you know, as I said a little while back, you know, we fundamentally depend on there being physical hardware underneath NSX to provide the capacity and the connectivity. And so one of the things that we really took as like an axiom at the beginning of our network virtualization journey was that when you virtualize the network, you have to provide everything at the virtual layer that somebody would expect to be able to get at the physical layer. That's kind of the nature of virtualization. You know, when you virtualize compute, you end up with a virtual machine that has all of the properties of a physical machine. And so the same is true for virtual networks, which means you have to have things like SNMP. You know, it's not the most exciting thing, but, you know, physical networks have them. Virtual networks have to have SNMP MIPS. You have to have NetFlow. You know, all the things that you expect to get from a physical network are provided in the virtual network. So that was kind of our starting position. Of course, once you have that, it makes it very easy for tool vendors to say, oh, so a virtual network looks a lot like a physical network. I can go and look at their NetFlow data. Mm-hmm. I can go and look at their MIBs. And then on top of that, you get to start doing things that are virtually impossible to do at the physical layer. So, for example, Traceflow is this new feature where we synthetically create a packet at the VNIC. It looks as if it came from the guest VM, but it's actually synthetically generated inside the hypervisor. Mm-hmm. And it has a little flag in it that says, this is for troubleshooting. So as it works its way through the forwarding pipeline, you can see what happens to that packet at every step and report it back. And so, and then eventually that packet gets delivered to the remote server. It passes through the hypervisor and again traces its way through the logical forwarding pipeline. So you can get extremely detailed information about the state of the forwarding pipeline end-to-end with a packet that was synthetically generated. This is the sort of magic that you can do in virtual space that you really can't do in the physical world.
Well, you can also do it inside of a space that you own end to end. You couldn't do that on the internet, for example, because you couldn't trust everybody in the path to add metadata to the synthetically generated packet to say, you know, you just went through a hop and it took 250 milliseconds. Nobody would do that. What's in it for them? So, but inside a data center or in a network that you own or in software-defined WAN, you can start to do these sorts of things and add value to networking that nobody would, you know, that we haven't traditionally thought of, right?
Yeah, and I think this is one of the really cool things about virtualization is that step one is you recreate the physical world in software. Step two is you do magic in that virtual world that's impossible to do in the physical world.
Yeah, in the same way that in the WAN we run OSPF because it instead of BGP because it makes sense, right? I'm getting off track a little bit. So security. Now, extending this partner integration, you're also doing partnerships in the security part with Intel Security and Checkpoint. Now, I know Checkpoint's a firewall vendor and an IDS, but I'm not familiar with what Intel Security is. So tell me, A, what is Intel Security? And B, what does this security partner integration look like? Is it, you know, firewalls in a VM or what?
as you mentioned, there are a couple of new partnerships in regards to the security space with Check Point and Intel McAfee. We started this journey with Palo Alto Networks, where the Palo Alto Networks started offering their next-gen firewall capabilities and security capabilities on top of the NSX platform. The way to think about the security service chaining and automation that we've done is, let's say you have 100 workloads and 40 of them are PCI workloads. And so for those 40 workloads, you may want deeper inspection of packets. And as a result, for those 40 workloads, you can essentially place a third-party tool like a Palo Alto Networks and now Checkpoint and Intel McAfee IDS IPS to say, you know, for all 443 traffic, please send it to this NG firewall. And I want to inspect all my traffic to go through a virtual IDS IPS. And the way this works is this is fully distributed. So the service chaining is happening locally on each host. We take care of the entire life cycle of the appliance and the solution, as well as it's a single policy. As we stated earlier, you can create a policy called PCI, which says any workload that enters the PCI zone will get, you know, layer 7 inspection through our NG firewall partnerships, as well as all of it will go through a IDS IPS, which is localized for those workloads. So it's policy service chaining for workloads that need that additional capability in the data center, specifically in the east-west scenario. And that's what we are talking about. So this McAfee partnership right now is IDS IPS delivered in a distributed fashion on top of the NSX security platform.
And again, you manage the life cycles, which sounds to me like it's some of the use case there is on demand, where maybe you're building a particular tenant environment and they've decided they wanted that sort of service for their workloads. And so you spin it up. And then when they go away as a tenant, you spin it back down?
You can absolutely do that, yes. And so not only the policy provisioning, but getting this services appliances from our partners there, setting it and getting the workload activated. And when the workload is deactivated, deactivating the whole system is all possible with this framework.
You seeing more enterprises want that, or is it actually like folks building a cloud that want to provide specific value-add services to their customers, to their tenants?
We've seen a mixture of both, but we are definitely seeing interest on the enterprise side because the security teams that are looking at NSX for micro-segmentation are looking for a consistent tool set across their north-south firewalling and the segmentation that we provide for east-west. And so this is a mechanism for them to essentially leverage the best of both worlds in that regard and get a consistent tool set across solutions. Another interesting attribute of the platform is you could, as a vendor A, mark a particular workload as having, say, malware, and vendor B can then take a certain action based on that tag. And so that kind of what I call as inter-vendor automation is also part of the platform. And so that is what enterprises like, is not only are we bringing the best of breed of partners, but we also have a framework and a policy model which allows for a greater automation and interaction amongst these partnerships.
Now, by tag, what are you actually meaning there? Some sort of metadata that gets attached in the policy to force a service chain event?
That is correct. So let's say Symantec as a partner detects that a certain workload has malware and it can essentially tag that VM saying that this workload is infected. And based on that tag, the security policy might have been that let's quarantine the workload. So let's not allow any more communication for that workload. And as a result, with the NSX firewalling attribute, you can automatically shut down all communication or put it in a quarantine zone based on the policy that was set.
I'm going to ask another question here because this kind of brought this to mind. We've been talking about all of this NSX functionality in the context of vSphere. I kind of remember the back of my head that multi-hypervisor support was going away for NSX. Is that true or is that a misconception on my part?
Absolutely false. We continue to advance our agenda in terms of multi-hypervisor environments. We have multiple customers in production running NSX in multiple multi-hypervisor environments, and that is a continued goal and focus for us, including adding additional functionality to ensure that we can provide a consistent framework across any hypervisor, and now with the OVSDB framework for bare metal workloads. And as new concepts come come along, like containers and other things for those constructs, so that we are that abstraction data center-wide for networking and security.
Okay, so that's actually a really important distinction to make, is feature parity. vSphere, I would think, would be the, you know, the favorite son, because, you know, for obvious reasons of where NSX lives these days. But you're suggesting that it should be hypervisor agnostic from an NSX perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as possible, we'd like to be hypervisor agnostic. And, you know, we make a lot of investment in contributions to Open vSwitch. And so that's kind of our insertion point for getting a lot of capabilities into multi-hypervisor environments. And I'm sure you know that, you know, many of the lead contributors to the OVS project are, you know, still with us here at VMware.
Oh, yeah, we're aware. We've had those guys on to talk with us.
Yeah, so in terms of feature parity across different hypervisors, you know, we do make a lot of investments in Open vSwitch. And I think, as you know, we have a lot of the lead contributors to OVS sitting, you know, as part of our team in the networking and security business unit. So in a perfect world, I think we'd like to have feature parity across all the different hypervisors. We're certainly under some constraints in the open source world, because you essentially have to get things accepted into Linux, which, you know, is not something that we control. And so we are sort of aggressively pushing to get new features. Things like stateful firewalling, for example, have historically not been provided by OVS, but we are working to get that sort of capability in there. So, you know, our objective is to maintain that parity as much as possible. And, you know, it's probably even worth mentioning, too, that from our point of view, even the hypervisor is a somewhat arbitrary distinction, that we're very actively looking into what it takes to start treating containers as first-class endpoints. Because, you know, I think what you might find, you know, a few years from now is that there'll be a lot more usage of containers, and, you know, the container will, to some extent, be doing the, you know, fulfilling the role that a VM does for some classes of user. And so, you know, in that environment, we'd like NSX to be the logical place to provide, place to enforce policy. Would be, you know, we'd use the probably Open vSwitch to enforce policy on containers and control that with NSX. And you could even think about, you know, workloads running in public clouds as yet another category, you know, of an endpoint that we could apply NSX policy to. So our attitude is, you know, NSX provides this fantastic framework for providing networking services to a wide range of different endpoints. And, you know, virtual machines, whether they're running on vSphere or KVM or Xen, they're just, you know, one category of endpoint. And we don't see that as the limit for what we can control.
But it's a challenge of getting yourself into the middle of the data stream in a way that doesn't impact performance, which is going to be pretty different depending on the model you're talking about. vSphere, different from other hypervisors, different from... You didn't say Docker specifically. You said containers, but Docker and, you know, that's a very different networking model, which is different again from public cloud.
Yeah, so absolutely, it's not a trivial thing to sort of fulfill that vision. But Guido Appenzeller's presentation at VMworld this year, he actually had some demos around this to show the kind of things that we're looking. You know, Guido's thinking about, you know, several years out, and so the things he showed were just proof of concept. But, you know, we are actually quite actively engaged with container community. We know some of the networking folks at Docker, and so, you know, we're actively trying to make sure that we can position NSX as a relevant solution for those environments.
I guess another misconception that's worth, or conception or misconception, I guess, that I'll put to you guys. I hear from a lot of operators, folks that are in the field doing network work, and NSX has been criticized from some of the folks looking at it as difficult to implement or difficult to operationalize. You guys have a reaction to that?
The way to think about, NSX and, you know, we, just like any new product introduction in a new category to some extent, network virtualization, there will be some challenges associated with learning the product and implementing the product depending on the different environments that we are talking about. So we acknowledge that. And as a product team, we are constantly taking feedback and working to improve that experience. That is definitely something top of mind. However, if you think about the notion of what we are doing, which is new product in a new category, and not just in a new category, the folks that are using this are network and security admins who are themselves getting, in some cases, familiar with the virtualization aspects in that regard. And so the combination of all these things sometimes creates a perfect storm in certain customer scenarios. So what we're trying to do as a result of this is spending a lot lot of time around education. So we have classes now available extensively from install, configure, manage classes. And as part of kind of the ongoing operational excellence process, we have started new classes around design and deployment, as well as operations and troubleshooting. And so we are taking the time to invest in that aspect so that we can bring our understanding from our 100 plus customers and share it more easily with the customers who are starting the journey with us going forward. So there is definitely room for improvement. We are working towards it. But we feel like it is also because of where we are and the category that we are initializing with NSX.
Now, one comment I'll make about the training is from the people I've heard go, NSX hard to install and operationalize? Nah, I thought it was pretty easy. They've been through training. And so apparently when you go through the training, it it does help enormously. So yet another operational kind of question that I'm curious about. VXLAN kind of seems to be the encapsulation type everybody's settled on. NVGRE is still there, although I don't see it picking up popularity outside of the Microsoft realm. And then Genevieve was a standard that was proposed, and I haven't heard squat about it since that proposal. Do you guys, and from an NSX perspective, care about encapsulation types? Is that a concern?
I would certainly say it's not a concern. I was actually just talking to Martin Casado this morning, and he said, isn't it awesome that like for the last 12 months, nobody's been talking to us about encapsulation? Because it's kind of a low-level detail. And you know, I talked a little bit about it at VMworld, that we like to think about the choice of encapsulation as being an important decision, the same way it's important that you pick the right kind of cabling for your data center. It's like, you know, don't use single mode fiber if you actually can get away with multi-mode. Don't use Cat5 twisted pair if you actually need fiber. You know, it's like these decisions are important, but it's like, does your data center architecture depend on what kind of cabling you use? You know, hopefully not. So
it does sort of, right? Because the cabling choice can force you into some decisions.
Right.
But, you know, you but it doesn't inherently drive you one way or the other. And I think ultimately, you know, I keep seeing that your NSX keeps announcing, you know, advancements around STT in terms of performance.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, and to me, it doesn't matter. If you're communicating between two endpoints, whether it's STT, VXLAN, or MPLS over GRE is kind of not that relevant. Each one's got its features, and, you know, complexity is a problem. If you're running dozens of these overlays, you know, GRE and IP and IP and whatever, you've got a hassle, but it's not the world won't end. We already run fiber channel in our data centers. It can't get any worse than that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think the analogy is actually extremely powerful because, you know, you're absolutely right that you don't want to have to troubleshoot, you know, seven different encapsulations. And so one of the things that we kind of figured out was that there were some really good aspects of STT and there were some really good aspects of VXLAN and there were some good aspects of NVGRE. And we really wanted to try to get one encapsulation that could combine all those good aspects. And we wanted to do it in a way that we'd never have to do this again. And so, you know, in that sort of time-honored tradition, you know, the way to solve the problem of having too many standards is to create one more standard. You know, so we
and even worse, do it in the ITF so we can all argue over the power of the bike shed.
Well, we actually got really good industry traction around Genev, and I don't know if I have all the, you know, all the vendors in my head right now, but there's like four different NIC vendors who are supporting Genev. There's multiple different software stacks supporting it. It's actually in OVN now, you know, the open source networking layer. So there's a lot of support for Genev. And, you know, we do think it is kind of it's the future. And because it's so extensible, I'm kind of optimistic that we're not going to be having this discussion too many more times. So I'm pretty happy that we did the work on Genev. And by the way,
I admire your optimism. The history of networking suggests that there should be many, many more protocols to come.
Yeah, no, it's probably true. You know, I always like to throw up at least one encapsulation picture during any of my talks just so people feel they got their money's worth. They're like, they know it was a networking talk because they saw some ASCII headers.
Yeah, the reason I say it doesn't matter is if you go and talk to the silicon manufacturers, they're not actually building the silicon for just one standard. They're building the silicon so you can bit match any sort of tunneling protocol and building loops so you can recircle and doing the stuff necessary. So in terms of the only point where you really, really care about the encapsulation isn't between the software endpoints or the virtual endpoints. It's where you go from the virtual to the physical. And so whether you're using MPLS for that or VXLAN, as long as the hardware supports it and can do it at very low latency and at sufficient speed, because when you break out of the VXLAN overlay, you're usually talking 10 gig, 40 gig connectivity breakouts, because if you've got all those VMware servers, they've all got to get out somewhere to get to the internet at the very least. So that's where your problem is. But the silicon is not set up for just VXLAN. You won't be able to go and buy brand X switch and it only does VXLAN. The actual silicon set up forever, and it's just up to the software vendor to implement the right pattern matching in their code to support the different protocols.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a really interesting trend, actually, towards the silicon getting more programmable. You're absolutely right that, you know, even I know Broadcom announced support for Genev, and, you know, it was just basically a firmware change or something like that on the
silicon. An API change, I think, too. They had to define the API and then, as you say, some firmware inside the switch to recognize the bit pattern. But, you know, straightforward enough. The world won't end. You know, arguing over that is like arguing over the color of the bike shed. Let's move on and talk about how many bikes we want to put in the bike shed.
Exactly.
You know, whether it needs to be a bunker or just made out of plywood, whatever. That sort of thing. Sorry to derail you there.
No, I think we're good. So I think we can move on from encapsulations now. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Very good.
You can have any encapsulation you like. Okay, so as we're getting towards the end of the show here, I did just want to have one final question. And now that we've sort of talked about all the business issues, one of the most common things that I see people when I'm talking to people about NSX and how they're using it is they're saying it's really hard to get the networking people to talk about NSX, or it's really hard to get the VMware, you know, the sysadmins to let go of VMware so the networking people can help them with the networking piece. Is that something you're seeing in the field?
I would say that that is a fair observation. I think NSX and the general concept of software-defined data center is starting to kind of break at the silos that have existed in our data center operations across compute, storage, network, and security. And so with a product like NSX and the general approach towards the software-defined data center, it is about actually having these teams engage with each other, work on common design paradigms, and then figure out the handoffs, so to speak, of where overall application automation meets infrastructure automation. I think it is fair to kind of say that customers are talking about this, and as a result we are working with our customers through the deployments that we've seen. We've learned a lot about how to engage better, how to engage across organizations, and kind of bring that consensus, and so we're using those learnings now to take it back to the next set of customers who are going to production with us. So definitely an area where there is a little bit of friction, but we are starting to see network admins jump over and start participating in NSX discussions, in a lot of cases administering it and taking control of it. And the same is happening on the security front, where the security guys are now coming to the table and saying, we like the security platform. How can we work with you? How can we make the entire experience where security is not a bolt-on, but it's built in to the infrastructure? So lots of work to do here, it's going to be it's going to be interesting times ahead.
I'm just thinking putting the security person in the room with the networking and the sysadmin is just like, you know, let's mix up some more Gelignite. No, let's make it bigger. You know, it's
not... I would say it is fascinating to be in that room and watch the folks interact and sometimes kind of see it all come together.
I just think, you know, Ethan, that is to me is one of the biggest challenges, is that networking guys often lived in isolation. You know, the network finished at the physical port, and then the server guy plugged the cable in, and then that was it. You know, there was no interaction. And
it's funny, talking about this on Data Knots with me and Chris Wall have been going after exactly this. In fact, we recorded a show we haven't published yet about that specific problem, how the networking does not end at the physical port. It actually extends deeply into the hypervisor now and what all that means. And NSX is just a highlight of that. It's a much it really brings together a multitude of worlds and underscores a point we've made many times in the last year, especially being a engineer that maybe you're deep on one topic, but knowing more about other silos in your business is kind of a big deal now. It's not really an excuse for sitting down and hunkering behind your CLI and configuring your switches. You got to know a lot more to be of most value to your business.
Yeah, I'm seeing some of our customers get really excited by that too. It's like, you know, instead of seeing a career of just, you know, getting better and better and better at managing CLI, you know, some of the networking guys are like, hey, this is great. I actually get to expand my horizons and, you know, I deliver more value to my organization now because my remit is broader than just being the, you know, the most expert in some obscure syntax.
All right, data center networking is boring too. You know, once you set up the, sometimes, you know, it's like once you set up the spanning tree and the design, it's like, you know, put the rip stops on that and walk away.
That's
our goal. Make it really simple.
Data center networking in a certain sense is boring because once you get it right, you just replicate it out and do the same thing over and over and over again. If you're doing it right, you better not be building little snowflakes all over your data center. And, you know, and in that context, once you got it right, how exciting is that? I already did that. And so looking into how your network and then all of the other technology components in your data center are delivering applications for the business becomes the interesting part. It's not just the network that got built. Now it's, how does the storage interact with that? And what does the virtualization layer look like with that? And, how do we holistically bring all these pieces together to deliver some application? That's where it gets interesting, I think.
Yeah. And we absolutely see some of our customers like basically building a blended team. And so, it's not just the networking silo, the storage silo, et cetera. It's like they're saying, okay, we're going to have a team that's responsible for meeting the needs of the applications.
Mm. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear you say that.
And the second part, I think, from my point of view, is once you move away from this, you know, attached to the physical and SNMP is the only API, you know, or maybe NetFlow, which is chucking out so much data, it can be hard to turn it into something useful, Splunk or no Splunk. The virtual idea that you could develop APIs very rapidly and then use visibility tools to say, you know, start graphically mapping things together, I'm far more optimistic about that than I have been, because SNMP is sort of still locked into around about the mid-1990s, hasn't really innovated, and so ability to build much better network management platforms is static. And until the network industry starts to build APIs that replace SNMP with richer data, and virtual platforms are the only way we're going to do that, because they can iterate over things like OVSDB very quickly, add new variables, new data sources, etc., and we can get somewhere where we actually have, you know, click a button and the network reliably does something, but more importantly, you can see it.
Yeah.
You can see what it's doing and get visibility, eyes on. And, you know, you've talked today about your partnerships with NSX, like the Gigamons and the Intel Securities for Firewalls and the visibility tool chains around and the Arkin and those types of things. It's less of a point solution. You know, you buy this, it does that. It's more of a supermarket. You go down the supermarket and you say, I'll have one of them, and I'll have one of them, and I'll have one of them, and I put them all together and I've got dinner. Make it myself.
There you go. NSX, it's what's for dinner.
Well, that's it for the show this week. Thanks for listening to Packet Pushers. We should be back again in a week or so. Make sure you come back. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. Bruce Davey, who is the Chief Technology Officer for Networking at VMware, and Milan Desai, Senior Director of Product Management at the NSBU, also at VMware. Thanks to Mr. Banks for joining us as always. And of course, I'm Greg Farrow. We would love to hear your feedback about today's show. Please send us an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. Good, bad, or indifferent? Love to hear about it. Alternatively, you can check out the podcast website at packetpushers.net and leave comments on today's show. We will make sure that we follow those comments. And if you've got something to say, we can forward that on to the vendor. And VMware will be dropping a bunch of interesting topics and links into the show notes. We'll try and make sure we get some white papers and other reference information. You can, of course, follow us on the Twitter and Packet Pushers and other fine social media like the Facebooks, etc. But as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.